that's all I can think to say at the moment. But I hope we recorded this. By the way, have we recorded it?
I did do, yeah.
Good. All right. Yeah, because I think we should. I think other people should hear it as well. Okay. Thanks.
Paddy, I've got a question for you. This.
Your hand's not up. Sorry, you can't.
I know
you
it isn't.
Can't speak now.
I'm going to. Is it called Stephen Colbert? Is it?
Yeah.
Hasn't his show been cancelled? Did I understand that correctly? His show's been cancelled because of the way that he keps attacking Trump. Is that correct?
Sort of. What's actually happened is that Paramount, that owns the show, the long and short of it was that Paramount was being sued by Trump for $16 billion for editing a Kamala Harris 60 Minutes interview. They did edit it, but they edited it down so they could fit it in a short excerpt in another news item. And he'd sued them for distorting what she was saying to make him look bad. It was complete utter rubbish. It was a pernicious lawsuit. But to everyone's amazement, Paramount just caved in and paid him. And the reason they paid him was because they needed him to sign off on a big merger that they were doing with Skydance. It's the kind of big media merger that needed the president's sign off, and he knew he had them over a barrel. So they just paid him. So they just paid the president off. And everyone knew that his lawsuit was complete bollocks, because the full length Kamala interview was available for everyone to see. So it was complete nonsense to say that they distorted by cutting things out. They distorted it. But anyway, there was all that. So he just extorts money, basically. Days after they paid him that money, Stephen Colbert on his show basically said that Paramount, CBS had been cowardly, and they just paid Trump a bribe. Within days, he got his show cancelled. It's still going. Weirdly, this is the weird part. It's still going, and it'll be going for another 10 months. And the reason why it's been cancelled, according to Paramount, is that it's not making enough money. Now, it's a bit weird because it's their top-rated show. It's the absolutely top-rated show. It's hugely popular. But so no one believes this excuse, and the timing of it, just days after all this business with Trump, just looks, it's fishy as hell. So the general view is that, yeah, Stephen Colbert, who is a really outspoken critic of Trump, and he's very, very funny as well, no one believes that this is accidental. And Trump was crowing about it on Truth Social afterwards, and saying, yeah, I hope Jimmy Kimmel's next, kind of thing. So, you know, Democrats, comedians in a lot of all these people are they're kind of half like Jon Stewart. They're kind of half news presenter and half comedian. So it's a very entertaining sort of way of getting the news that we don't get in this country. In Britain, we don't have that sort of thing. I think it's a function of the fact that in America, news media is so polarized that if you're watching, you know, if you're a Democrat, you watch CBS or CNN, and if you're a Republican, you watch Fox. So there's no requirement to be unbiased. So you might as well make a comedy out of it. So that's what they do. So, yeah, that's a very long answer.
Thanks. Howard again.
Since nobody else wants to say anything for the moment, can I raise something else? What you brought up at the end, Paddy, about certain things may suddenly sort of click and we get a sort of massive change in people's views, mentality, desire for change, etc., reminded me of something. It reminded me of quite a few people here will remember Steve Coleman, who was a stalwart party member for many years, and until he sort of went astray, as it were, became an academic and started to become involved in things that really were not compatible with membership of the party. But above all, he started to sort of analyse the democratic process within capitalism, why people voted the way they did, etc. Still does, I think. Maybe he's retired now, but he's still sort of carrying on in some capacity as a researcher in those areas. And his big thing is, don't know if I can think of the exact word he uses, but it's something like voter feeling. He sort of claims to look into the way people feel about a politician or an idea or a policy or something, rather than sort of rather than the way they may or may not rationally analyze it. And what you said, as I say, towards the end of your talk, had it to a certain extent reminded me of that. I don't know whether it's the same kind of thing that you had in your mind in talking about it or not.
No, I didn't particularly. No, I don't remember Steve Coleman saying anything like that when he was in the party. But
he did when he was in the party. That's before.
Right. Okay. No, I was just thinking. It's because I was. I remember discussions we've had in the past. Darren, who's going to speak in a minute, has taken part in these. And this is this. I was thinking about this dynamic of you know, how does capitalist society change? Does it go through these sort of pendulum swings, or is it sort of marching, or does it make permanent shifts to the right or the left, and or does it do a bit of both? I mean, it might be both, but it occurred to me that maybe isn't the right way to look at it, and that another way could be to look at it in terms of you don't see most of the change because it's all happening in people's heads, and it's not necessarily reflected in votes that are cast, because people vote for what they think they can get rather than what they want. So you don't see these deep changes, and that's when it made me think that it's like a sort of more tectonic process that you know, the way that there was that big huge earthquake off Kamchatka the other day, 8.3 or something like that, but you know, nobody knew it was coming. You know, seismologists can't tell that these things are going to happen still. They can't predict earthquakes even now because there's no indication, or there's confusing indications. I don't know if that answers the question. I don't know what I mean by it. I mean, I'm not predicting that something big is going to... There's going to be some big earthquake in the next few days, but if there is, I'll be glad to take... I'll be happy to take credit for it.
Thanks, you want to come back, Howard?
No, that's fine. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Well, Comrade O'Neill next, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Just to the specifics of Paddy's talk on the business of Trump and his possible difficulties, I'll take a contrary view, just, you know, I'm not going to live and die by it, but just maybe to generate more discussion. And I think that unless there is substantially new information revealed about Trump and his connections to Epstein, I honestly think he's going to ride it out. I acknowledge that this is arguably been the most significant kind of impact on Trump's, not just his presidency, but arguably, you know, his stranglehold over the Republican Party that he's obviously exercised for nearly 10 years now. But, you know, I think it's telling that when Paddy was, like, you know, like, giving some background to, you know, how it's been discussed in, like, public life, I think it's telling that And I don't think it's Paddy's mistake. I think it's telling, to repeat myself again, is that the people he was talking about sort of making political capital out of it was not necessarily Democrats, was not particularly Democratic leaders. It was, liberal, talk show hosts, podcasters, etc. You know, and basically the same people, and I think that as a news story, it's not going to go away anytime soon. But I just think that any momentum that might have actually been in place to moving towards significantly damaging Trump, I think it is gone, or it was never close enough. And I think, as much, I think Trump is canny enough to realize that if he just kind of stands fast, and I know he says some very strange things about it in press conferences, etc. But I honestly think he still believes he can kind of ride it out, because, and there has been, I don't know if Paddy's aware, but there has obviously been polling in America, over this issue. And what is interesting, that it is a political topic which has caught the interest of people significantly, and there's a higher percentage of the American sort of voting population who are taking notice of the story in comparison to, I don't know, tariffs or American foreign policy, for example. But I still believe there's just not enough there. And what is shocking about it, if it is the case that, what Paddy suggested in his talk about, how close Epstein and Trump was to the point of sort of criminality, like depravity, actually, that if that is true, then there's people within Trump's, within the Republican administration, the Trump, party, who are already aware of this. And are, these sanctimonious individuals, who, the fact that they are kind of prepared to sort of look the other way is shocking. It's just absolutely shocking. A podcast I occasionally listen to or watch rather more on YouTube is one called The Bulwark, which is an American political podcast. It originates out of the Republicans who are like never Trumpers, like but similar to the Lincoln Project, if people are aware of the Lincoln Project. And I was watching they produce too much material, to be honest, but I was watching one of their segments a couple of days ago, and one of the editor of the show, there's like four or five of them, and she was basically explaining, she wants to get to the situation that 20 years from now, 25 years from now, in America and American public life, you'll have all these people who have big gaps in their resumes, because basically these are people who were Trumpers or MAGA. And, the narrative of Trump, the realization of Trump and has the fact that he's a shakedown artist, possibly, worse, people will be so embarrassed and so ashamed of it that they won't even be prepared to like public acknowledge it, but like all these Germans in West Germany in the 50s and 60s who apparently were all anti-Nazis, anti-fascists, but I think that's just wish fulfillment on her part. I think at the moment the fact that the Democrats don't even see this, I generally don't think they see this as an issue to decapitate Trump or his administration, because I just think even now they still don't know how to deal with Trump. I think he can ride it out, unfortunately. I personally think it'll probably be the midterms, if and when the midterms come around, and if the Republicans take a real battering, then that'll be possibly the time when Republicans might actually turn in and think, well, Trump is now more of a liability for us than an asset. But I just don't see that anytime soon, because it is Trump's party, rather than the Republican Party as it currently exists. Cheers.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a very good chance that Trump will ride it out, actually. I don't think that takes anything away from the seriousness of the situation at the moment. But it all depends what happens in the next... I mean, things... New stuff's happening every day. I mean, I only just caught up with the news, an hour ago, that the Democrats are trying to table this resolution to have a new law so that they can release files. It depends what comes out in these files. I mean, if this deposition, this California deposition that I referred to, was in the papers, I mean, I think it would destroy Trump, frankly. And if he goes down, his gang will definitely go down with him, because there's no way any of those people... They've changed their arguments so many times to whatever it is he wants to say. You know, they'll argue black is black. Then if he tells them to, they'll change their mind and say it's white. We've all seen this. I think they've got... If he goes down, they'll all go down, because they've got absolutely... They'll have no credibility left. So I think the thing you were referring to on the bulwark is, I think there's very likely a bit of truth in that. But we'll just have to see. And it changes every day at the moment. So it's really quite quite exhausting keeping up with it. Okay.
Mike Foster, then, please.
Thanks. Thanks, Paddy. Yeah, that was a very informative talk, you know, to because I'd been sort of missing a few pieces of the jigsaw about what's going on in America. So yeah, it was useful to have that roundup, and a very sort of perceptive angle that you took on it as well. And I mean, just on Trump, I'm not quite sure how it will go, but I suppose on Trump himself, I can't quite decide whether he, you know, consciously lies for much of what he says, or if he genuinely believes whatever interpretation or statement is best for him. You know, he just is programmed almost to sort of believe whatever's best for him, regardless of the facts. Yeah, well, I'm guessing more he's a sort of a conscious a liar, but yeah, I mean, he certainly sort of represents the sort of polarization of left and right, and I'm more used to how that sort of played out in the sort of social media debate and things in Britain rather than America, but yeah, of course they sort of mirror each other to some extent, and it's very different from sort of the 90s, where politics seemed quite sort of bland in comparison. Whereas now, the pendulum has sort of swung to, that sort of sharp divide between left and right again. But, you know, it sort of manifests itself in a different way to during the 80s or the 70s. So maybe if that sort of pendulum analogy is accurate, you know, whenever the pendulum swings towards left or right being dominant, whenever it goes back, it doesn't quite go back to the same position. But, left and right are both sort of very much digging their heels in at the moment, and it seems as if in sort of the right was in sort of the ascendant, in that it's sort of pronounced the death of woke, and sort of the rise of sort of right wing podcasters, and I suppose as an example of how the right is sort of reasserting itself in the media, perhaps as a to try and sort of detract attention away from the troubles that Trump's in. Has anyone seen that jeans advert, which has come out in the last couple of days? It's by an American clothing manufacturer called American Eagle, and it's got a woman model in who, and the slogan is that she's got good genes, obviously with a play on words with genes as in genetics and genes as in clothing, and that's of course sort of stoked up a lot of discussion online about race, and if that's sort of a white supremacist interpretation. So yeah, it hasn't really been mentioned so much as this evening, but you've got the whole racial politics angle of the left and right split, as well as that which is more sort of connected with who supports which person in power. But anyway, I'm starting to ramble a bit now. But yeah, I suppose it's interesting and rather alarming times for the way that left and right are sort of at each other's throats. And yeah, I'm glad that we don't take sides in that debate in the Socialist Party. Yeah, thank you.
Paddy, shall we go straight to Darren, or do you want to come back to Mike?
Well, just one small thing about the left and right divide. It's a lot less sort of racially defined than it used to be. I mean, a lot of Latino voters voted Trump, and the black vote in America still tends to be largely Democrat. But I think it's a lot less pronounced than it used to be, and the same is true of men and women. That's going off at a tangent, but let's carry on.
Okay, so Darren again, please.
Yeah, I mean, just a quick reply to what Paddy just said. I think with the Latino vote, I think it was actually more men than women, and arguably young men. And, you know, that probably ties in with what you were saying earlier about, you know, the right wing. The manosphere, or whatever you want to call it, you know, the podcasters, you know, definitely the Republicans in the last election cycle kind of cottoned onto this idea that young men were feeling kind of neglected, boohoo, and they kind of like played to those certain prejudices. And there's no doubt from like election results, you know, and election analysis of the election that Trump, you know, one of the areas where he really did kind of boost his support to the point where a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have voted came out and voted for him was young men, and that was Latino men. That wasn't the reason, obviously, I was raising my hand. Maybe go back to what we're saying, but I kind of forgot. You know, I do think it's interesting, the business of Trump suing the Wall Street Journal and Murdoch, you know, the Empire. Because as you'd mentioned, Paddy, in your talk, you know, he's been brilliant, Trump. And there's no doubt about it. He's been very, you know, he's been arguably very incredibly successful, you know, the recent trade deal with Europe, for example. But in terms of like media companies, he's in universities in America, he's been incredibly successful being a shakedown artist. You know, there's very, very few people, very few institutions who have been able to kind of like stand their ground and kind of face him down. And it will be interesting to see what happens with the Wall Street Journal and Murdoch, whether or not, because, you know, some commentators have suggested that, you know, that maybe Trump will blink first on this, that it won't actually go to court, that will actually, you know, this ridiculous, was it, did you say $10 billion soon, the Murdoch administration, because of this Epstein birthday drawing, $10 billion, you know, but it would be interesting if it was to go to court. Is this where new information comes out? You know, because if it does actually go to court, then basically, you know, that means that Trump can be asked questions that arguably no politician, you know, no opposition politician as yet has really been in a position to ask him. So that's interesting. And sort of telling on for that is it, why has Fox continued to support Trump in the Republicans? Yeah, I know you said it was because it's this kind of right-left kind of like dichotomy, I guess. But, you know, and basically people on the left support, you know, watch CNN, and people on the right watch Fox. I think it's more that I think that's not strictly true. I think was the thing about Fox, you got to bear in mind about Fox. Fox, because they defended, or they were prepared to kind of give credence to Trump's claim of the election being stolen in 2020, they lost a $700 million lawsuit against the Dominion voting machines, I think. I can't fully remember. They lost that much money. That's a big chunk of change. And yet, and it's well documented by Michael Wolff in his books about Trump that Murdoch hates Trump. He despises Trump. He actually thinks he's a bit of an idiot. He has contempt for him. But so why is it the case that Fox have still, you know, when it when it, you know, when the chips fall, they've still backed Trump. And it's not just because it's like the right left thing. It's because what's actually happened is that there's now news organizations to the right of Fox who are significant enough, impactful enough that Fox are actually threatened by them. You know, like, I don't know if people in Britain have heard of a news organization called Newsmax. You know, if you think Fox News is bad, this is like times 10. And Fox are actually caught between a rock and a hard place, between trying to pretend to be like a serious news organization, but at the same time realizing if they actually introduce too many facts to their news reports that they're going to lose customers, because that's basically what we're talking about here, customers to Newsmax. So that's you know, there's divisions within divisions. You know, it's not just this right-left thing. It's basically, if you look at the right in terms of like news media, which is so important now, you'll recognize that there's even splits there, and that arguably that's what's kept Fox as supportive of Trump as they are, not because they agree with him or they believe in him, but because they're worried that if they're too critical, they're actually going to lose a large chunk of their customer base to Newsmax, who at this point are like, you know, Trump do or die, you know. So I think that's interesting, you know, how things are going. Cheers.
Yeah, that is interesting, Darren. Just one or two other things on this supposed lawsuit. Trump is suing... Trump is suing the Murdoch Empire $10 billion for damages. Now, the point has been made a journal called The Hill. What are his so-called damages likely to be worth anyway? His reputation for sexual misconduct conduct is already well known. He was found liable in New York for sexually abusing the writer E. Jean Carroll, and a New York jury convicted him of 34 counts of felony document falsification over that Stormy Daniels business. So he's got to sue for damages, and his court has got to consider that he has been actually damaged by this. The second problem with it is that if he actually does take Fox to court, under US libel law, Trump has to prove not only that the story is false, but that the Wall Street Journal knew they were false. And the Wall Street Journal is a pretty well established, has a lot of high reputation magazine. But worse even than that, the word, various people are saying that the information that the Wall Street Journal got was from the Department of Justice. It was directly from DOJ documents. And if Trump pursues his lawsuit, there is a process called discovery, where each side has to reveal their what they've got to the other side. And so this discovery process could very well open the floodgates to even more damaging DOJ material. So if the DOJ actually did leak this stuff, what else have they got? It's very, very... It does look very risky for Trump to do this. But as I pointed out before, Trump can hurt the Murdochs because he can take their license away. So it will stop them operating in the US. So, yeah, there's quite a lot to this. Anyway, that's enough of that. I think Steve was going to say something and then didn't, because I did not to.
Yeah, it was to do with Fox. I was just trying to work out how it would be possible for them to keep going. I think, yeah, Darren gave us the answer for that. I mean, keep going as a supporter of Trump when he's trying to take him to the cleaners.
He's also in court against Harvard at the moment, which I didn't mention, because he's trying to cancel billions of funding to Harvard, allegedly to fight institutionalized anti-Semitism on campus. He's already done this with Columbia, and Columbia just folded in surrender. But of course, Harvard's got $50 billion of their of its own funding, so it's just not going to cow to Trump. And it's already been in court, and the accusation that there is anti-Semitism on campus has been called has been questioned by the judge, Alison Burroughs, who also questioned how denying money allocated for medical research is supposed to stop anti-Semitism. She called, this is the judge presiding over the case, she called the government's claims mind-boggling. So Trump isn't doing very well against Harvard at the moment, at least in the opinion of the judge on the case.
Paddy, has nobody else got a hand up? I wonder if you know this. Something happened with Musk these days, because he's threatened to set up another political party to challenge these buggers at the next elections, hasn't he?
Well, unless
have that gone away?
Unless Darren knows anything about this, I've not heard anything about this. He seems to have gone very quiet. He sort of scurried back to Tesla and slammed the office door shut, so we don't seem to have heard anything more from this.
Adam Buick.
Yeah, I think we sometimes don't realise how different political and other conditions are in America than in Britain, and in fact in the rest of Europe. I mean, Paddy already mentioned one, is that the biased nature of the media. as I said, I've said this before on here. You watch CNN. This was before the election, and they just make no attempt to be objective like the BBC or Sky do. I think, in fact, if they behave like that in Britain, they would lose their license. So, in fact, you've got this freedom to say what you like on the media, to to be completely partisan and don't need to even pretend to be giving it an objective point of view. And the second difference is that America is a lawyer's paradise. People, Trump can sue people to silence them down, but other people like perhaps this woman in California can mount a false charge, in order to get, money out of somebody. So, I mean, all these sort of things wouldn't happen and couldn't happen in Britain. Of course, the judges there are political appointees, which is not the case here. In fact, I would question whether these Epstein papers, which presumably, what are they? They're the evidence collected by the police and the prosecution, so they're just raw material which the lawyers go through and make decisions as to what is credible and what isn't. I mean, can you imagine, for instance, the Jimmy Savile papers being published in here, or even, I mean, these sort of things aren't made public in order to protect the reputation of people who might have been accused by others who've been interviewed. So there's a difference there between the system there and the system that we know here. And I think the other thing, of course, is America is a land of conspiracy theories. They seem to have more credibility. I don't know what the historical or sociological reason is, that people over there seem to believe in them more than people over here. But on that last point, you said that believing in conspiracy theories is a sort of right-wing thing. But I mean, I know of at least four ex-members of our party who have become conspiracy theorists, and who, so it isn't just a right-wing thing. But anyway, so the main point I was going to make was that conditions in America are not, they're quite different from here. And this minor point at the end, how do you explain members of the party falling for conspiracy theories? I mean, well, some might even still be members for all I know, but I mean, the people I've got in mind aren't.
Well, I'll just... sorry, have you finished, Adam?
Sorry, I've muted myself. Presumably the noise has disappeared.
Oh, right. Well, I didn't actually say that conspiracy theories are a right-wing thing. I was summarising an argument from this guy, Brendan Miller, who says that he's quoting psychology studies saying that say that the conspiracy mindset is strongly associated with populism. Now, populism often is right-wing, but of course, as we know, it isn't always. So the link is between the conspiracy mindset and populism. And I also mentioned that, Brendan Miller's idea of populism was that often the narrative is of the rich, secretive elite at the top and all the poor unfortunates at the bottom. But, I mean, seeing as that's very much our own kind of analysis of society as well, it seemed to me that argument wasn't as strong as he thought it was. And that's part of what I was saying about the changes in people's mindsets, you know, that they can see the inequality of society, you know, when the rich are so rich they've got their own space programs, and but the poor are still struggling to get by wage check to wage check. I think our sort of analysis of society is in present in people's minds now in a way that it may not have been so much, certainly 30, 40 years ago. Anyway, I'm rambling now, so I'll stop.
What exactly are the Epstein Papers? Are they what I assumed they were? The evidence collected by the police and analysed by the...
And it's all Epstein's personal papers, his so-called black book, his records of email correspondence, phone logs, that sort of thing, all that stuff.
Would that be in the public domain in Britain?
I think it wouldn't. It wouldn't, yeah. But it's also this is quite exceptional in the States as well. It's not normally put in the public domain in the States. It's just the reason why there's such a demand is that Trump and the MAGA, before he was elected, this was one of the things that Trump was riding to power on, that he was going to release the Epstein papers. This was his whole claim. So now he's saying, oh, there's nothing to see. There's nothing to see here. No one believes him, you know. So that's why it's an exception. Normally, as you say, Adam, they wouldn't, these sort of things wouldn't normally be released. But because he'd absolutely made a point of saying that he would release them, and he hasn't, and now he won't, you know, that's what's upset everyone.
Darren's got his hand up again. Go ahead, please, Darren.
I'm not really one for conspiracy theories, you know, and I take on board what Adam said, but there is things that make you wonder about the whole Epstein business, you know, from why was the original charges over, was it 15 years ago, was sort of downgraded, so he basically got a slap in the wrist, you know, the business of his death, etc. You know why he was able to, was he murdered, did he kill himself, etc. You know, but I would say this point, you know, like, I understand why some people are so upset about this, because seemingly it was a paedophile ring, you know, at Epstein at the head. And the only two people who got any sort of, like, prosecution was Epstein. He was Epstein himself eventually, and Maxwell. But if it was to come out that Trump was involved, etc., and then he was to fall, I would still think that was fucked up, that there was this ring, this paedophile ring, this high-ranking paedophile ring, and only three people faced the consequences for it. And I would totally understand the cynicism for a lot of people, that this wasn't looking for justice for these victims. This was nothing more than a political ploy to take down your opponent. So, you know, even if this is the thing that, that eventually unseats Trump, the idea that it's only him, Maxwell and Epstein are the only three people who are like the perpetrators of this, or the monsters in this. I don't think you have to be a right-wing conspiracy theorist to be angered by this, you know. You know, if you're sincere about seeking justice for the victims and only three people face the consequences, then this is just a sham. This is, people are just using this for nothing more than a means to, like, get rid of somebody they don't like politically, you know. That's despicable, you know. You know, people are right to be angry about that. Cheers.
Yeah, I think that, I agree. I think that's right. I mean, it is a pretty obvious cover-up. I mean, you know, because I don't think there's any question. And who is named in these things? Who is so powerful that you know? It's suspected that Epstein was murdered, you know, because he knew too much, and he knew you know where the bodies were buried, so to speak. But lots of people are named in the Black Book thing that I've got. And in fact, it's common knowledge that, you know, Clinton was on the private plane, that Prince Andrew was. Lots of this is already known. So, you know, I'm not really sure what the point of murdering Epstein would have been. And if they murdered Epstein, who knew too much, why is Ghislaine Maxwell still alive in that case? You know, she must know as much as he does. So, yeah. I don't really go in for the sort of murder. That all seems a bit too kind of rabbit hole to me, but, you know, I think it's perfectly plausible that he just hanged himself because he didn't want a life in prison as a nonce after having lived it up. So, people are very upset about this, and it sort of casts a further light on the sort of, you know, the doings of the super rich. We don't know what they get up to, and this is sort of hint. This is sort of hint that some of what they get up to is probably pretty depraved.
Darren, are you coming back?
Yeah, just one side point, because this was in the news, and this is relating to Britain. You know, the business about, you know, right-wing populism, or the populism, the propensity to believe in conspiracy theories. The whole business, the fact that the far right has benefited so much in Britain from the whole grooming gang business, its supposed cover-up, you know, the cover-ups in places like Rotherham, for example, and this idea that, you know, this two-tier policing, you know, to borrow that phrase, of where they didn't want to kind of, like, prosecute these perpetrators, these rapists, because they, you know, from ethnic communities. Well, it's just been in the news, I believe, in the last few days, that in Rotherham there's a suggestion that police officers were also raping these young girls. And, you know, that obviously doesn't fit in with the narrative of why there was a cover-up. You know, that maybe suggests that part of the reason there was a cover-up is because the police themselves were taking advantage of these girls and these circumstances for their own depravity, you know. So it's like, that just kind of came up in my mind, like, you're talking about why there's cover-ups and what people, you know, we can agree that there's cover-ups, but then why there's cover-ups, you know. And, you know, maybe some people who previously thought, you know, the cover-ups in Britain, the grooming gangs, was purely to do with, like, you know, race relations, for want of a better term. But then it turns out that it's actually something actually darker, is darker than that, which is that the police themselves were involved. And this isn't like a racial thing. You know, these kind of cover-ups go back, you know, decades in many instances. You know, the Kinkora scandal. So the Kinkora scandal in Northern Ireland, I went down a rabbit hole recently reading about Cyril Smith, the Liberal MP in Rochdale, and how people were aware of his, his crimes going back decades. You know, up to the point of Thatcher. Thatcher, when he was awarded the knighthood, Cyril Smith, you know, they actually they were already known for like decades that Smith himself was someone who'd actually like sexually abused young boys, and yet for some reason it was just kind of like considered not important enough to actually prosecute him, you know. So, you know, unfortunately these things have always gone on, you know, and it understandably when they're covered up, you can understand, again, you can understand why some people, you know, are prepared to kind of embrace conspiracy theories for why these things are covered up and allowed to happen, supposedly allowed to happen. Cheers. Thanks.
I'm just reminded of a little domestic drama in the UK at the moment is over Greg Wallace of MasterChef, and just the news, I think it was yesterday, that one of the participants, if that's the word, in the series that's been recorded but not shown yet, was demanding that the whole series not be shown, because it wasn't just Greg Wallace and his antics, it was also this other guy making racist remarks, apparently. So this participant was demanding that they just didn't screen the entire series, but the BBC have decided to go ahead and screen the whole series with Greg Wallace and simply edit out this participant, so she doesn't appear, and they go, they're putting out the whole series anyway. I mean, that seems a bit surprising by the BBC, but I suppose they must, it's this sort of sunk cost thing, isn't it, that they think they put so much money into this series that they've got to air it, even though the host of it has been completely disgraced.
Okay, Howard, next, please.
Mark my words, Paddy. The series isn't going to go ahead, so it's not the reason they put my hand up. Actually, I think the zilch chance that they'll actually, despite what they're saying at the moment, that they'll air it at all, but. Anyway, what I was going to say was that I didn't know exactly what you were going to be talking about today from the, you know, the summary, but you know, the beginning. But I thought that you might be saying quite a bit about the economy, stupid, because you know, there's that famous saying. I think it was Ronald Reagan said the important thing is it, was it Reagan or was it Bush? I can't remember. The economy, stupid, and
Clinton.
Sorry.
Clinton.
Yeah, it was Clinton.
Was it Clinton? I'm sorry, got it. All right. Wrong on both counts. Sorry about that. A lot of people are saying that's what's going to bring him down, because the way he's sort of messing around with tariffs and this and that and the other, he's going to have an adverse effect on his, you know, on his ability to, you know, to keep the support he got when he won the election. That may well be the case, yeah. Just to say that an interesting article on this, which I read just yesterday, you may be interested in, Paddy, because it covers some of the ground that you've been looking at, is by Paul Mattick Jr., who's sort of well known to the party, has a position sort of not all that different. And he's written an article in a publication called The Brooklyn Rail. And the article is called, I can't remember the title of it offhand now, but it's about Trump, and it's extremely informative, not as informative as your talk, but nevertheless, interesting. I can actually put the link to it on the on the message page, on the chat page. Takes 5-10 minutes to read at the most. Don't know if you know about it, Paddy.
No, I didn't. I didn't know. Thank you.
I'll find it now. Actually, I'll find it before we wind up and then put the link on the chat.
Brian Johnson, you put your hand up and then you take it down deliberately. Or do you want to come in and comment?
No, it was covered by the previous speakers.
Okay, thanks, comrade.
Yeah. I was going to say something in response to what Howard said, but then I couldn't remember what he said. I didn't make a note, and he went on to talk about Paul Mattick.
Paddy, no, all I was saying, sorry, I'm still on there. All I was saying was that you know, whether the economy would be the key issue that would...
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I just actually listened today to a podcast by The Economist, where they have this thing that they call the Big Mac Index, and it's kind of their jokey way of looking at various countries' economies by comparing how much it costs to buy a Big Mac from McDonald's in those countries. It's a sort of bit of tongue-in-cheek, but they reckon it's a good sort of ballpark indicator. So they looked at the cost of Big Macs in America and the cost of Big Macs in, say, Taiwan and places like this, and then they compare the ratio of cost of Big Macs in those two places to the exchange rate. So if the cost of Big Macs in those two places is, let's say, 3-1, then the exchange rate of the currencies should be 3-1 if everything's correct. And if the exchange rate is out of kilter, out of whack with the Big Mac rates, then something's gone wrong. And they've concluded from this that, without getting into the details, which I can't remember anyway, the economy in the US is in decline. Prices are going up. The dollar is weakening, which they made the point of saying, if the dollar is weak, this should be good for exports, because, you know, your products are cheaper if you're exporting, and your prices are going to be cheaper to overseas buyers because you know your currency is weak. But they're not finding this, so the dollar is weak, so that's bad for imports. But it's also it's not improved their exports either. So they conclude, the big conclusion from their Big Mac Index is that the economy in America has suffered considerably from these tariffs, and that who's paying for these is not actually overseas workers, it's US workers. So if The Economist is saying that, and by the way, it's interesting to note that the editor of The Economist is on the steering group of the Bilderberg group, which meets every year sort of semi-secretively, not so secretive anymore, because they publish their annual agenda on their own website. You can go and look up and see what's on the Bilderberg agenda for this year, and also who's on the steering group, and the Economist editor is on the steering group, so people listen to the Economist. Anyway,
can I just say, I put the link now on the chat, and the title of the article actually is "The One Man Plague," but the article sort of suggests that isn't the case, that it's capitalism that's the plague, not the one man.
Well, it's almost 9 o'clock. Does anybody want to? Anybody who's not spoken that wants to on this topic want to raise an issue? Right, I'll take that. That means no. So, do we have an announcement for next week, Adam?
Yeah, it's Piers Hobson speaking on techno-feudalism 5 years on. So that's the topic next week.
Okay, thank you. Well, if nobody else has got any news or anything that they'd like to raise, I'll thank on the meeting's behalf. I'll thank Paddy for his efforts and wish everyone a good night.
Thank you, Paddy.
Thanks, Paddy. Thanks very much.